We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back to the Yins No Ball podcast. I am John Ledger, your host. Yes, this is our first pod without Brad Spielberger, and it is somewhat of a sad day as Brad begins his new job negotiating on behalf of an agency, on behalf of players with NFL organizations. He is going to be learning the ropes and doing that kind of stuff. So I'm extremely excited for Brad, extremely excited for the work that he is going to do there. He's going to crush it. That has been his dream for a long time, and I'm glad he has the opportunity to be able to step into that space. And as Brad and I talked about starting this show, he was the first and only person I actually reached out to about co-hosting with me on this show. I knew that that was going to be a possibility for him in the next year, and he was willing to jump in and go both feet in with to this thing with me, which I really appreciated. But I knew that was a possibility that in the near future that he was going to be moving into that arena, and really encouraged him in that. So not necessarily surprised by the fact that this move is upon us. Onions No Ball knew that that was going to come at some point, and we'll be looking for another co-host. I am not sure what the timeline for that will be, particularly because people who've been listening to this podcast for a while or know my full-time job in the summer, without getting into a ton of detail that's going to bore people, really is extensive in terms of the hours that I work, and it leaves me very little time for podcasting. So Yins No Ball, the feed stays up and everything like that. I don't know when or how often I'll be able to podcast over the course of the summer. I like to under-promise and hopefully over-deliver on that time during the summer. Hopefully most of you, by that point, will be a couple weeks after the draft. And obviously, if there's any news, I will get a podcast up on that. But hopefully most of you are vacationing and taking time away from football and podcasts anyway and gearing up for the season. However, when the season is set to resume, my schedule clears up quite nicely right around that time. And so I will be able to jump back into some of those things too. So just wanted to set the stage for people. I'll continue to remind listeners of that. But we've got about a month until that happens. And so over the course of the next month, I'll still be podcasting twice a week as I was with Brad. And we'll be covering the draft extensively on this podcast. And I have a bunch of cool guests lined up for other days as well, including tomorrow. We'll have a guest on and we'll be talking about offensive tackles in this class. And we'll be getting into some of the evaluations and fits for Pittsburgh, potentially talking about right and left side and good fits with scheme, and whether it's Arthur Smith scheme or what they ran last year that was so successful. So there'll be a lot to get into, and it's going to be a very fun discussion. So excited for that podcast today. Just wanted to take a chance, because it's a little bit of a solo pod today, I wanted to take a chance to be able to get to some of your questions here as we are about a couple weeks out from the draft, and see kind of what the fan base is thinking right now. There hasn't been a lot of news. The Steelers have this cap space. They've opened holes on their roster. However, I would say I know there's been some talk recently. Well, they moved on from Mason Cole and Deontay Johnson and Patrick Peterson. Now they haven't replaced any of those players. They did this to themselves. And I've seen some of those sentiments out there. I'm the first one to criticize the Steelers and their process at times. This just isn't that, in my opinion. I mean, the Deontay Johnson thing's actually a separate one, and I've talked extensively about that. It feels like there's a part two coming to that, and so I'm not going to talk any more about it unless we don't get a part two and they go into the season and it's like, no, it's George Pickens and a bunch of guys and some third-round rookie. Like, that would be disappointing, but that may be where we're headed. I understand the fact that, yes, you don't have a center, you don't have a nickel corner, you don't have another wideout. Like, it does feel like a lot. And I completely agree that it's troubling. However, that's the situation that they were put in this offseason. And having Mason Cole or Patrick Peterson didn't change the fact. It just, all that would have done was suggest that they were blind to the holes that already existed on the roster. This was a roster that needed replacements at both of those positions and needed to move on from both of those players for financial reasons, clearly. So let's not reinvent the wheel, please, and let's not do this revisionist history BS exercise where we try to pretend like those players actually would have answered any sort of question in front of this team this offseason. Those players were clearly not part of the solution. They won't be part of the solution moving forward, even if Patrick Peterson's brought onto the roster. It would be for veteran leadership guidance, whatever. If they're asked to play for this team, if they would return in any capacity, they wouldn't be a help to this team. Although it should be noted, they would be less of a financial burden. The decision to move on from both from a financial perspective was extremely easy, and that's getting lost on some of these analysts who are out there who are criticizing those moves and saying, well, they haven't done anything. I agree, they haven't done anything, and I wish they had done something, but this team wasn't in position to fix every hole this offseason. Moving on from the players who were so detrimental to their success, to what they were trying to achieve last season, is the first step. The perfect replacement for every player, a perfect player to start at every position, is probably not going to be available this offseason. Next offseason should be the one that you're like, okay, by the end of next offseason, we should feel pretty good about our roster top to bottom, starting 22 players. Like, that's where we should be at. We should have a certainty as to how these young players are developing and feel a little more confidence in them, players like Benton and Porter and Broderick Jones. And then there should be some replacements on this roster from this draft and from the next and from next year's draft and free agency that we feel like are going to be core pieces of this thing. If that isn't the case, then I think it's time to panic on those things. Right now, you're just looking at a roster that's probably going to be flawed at one or two semi to very important positions this upcoming season. That's just the reality of a team like the Steelers are in. Will they overachieve and be just above 500 team and sneak into the seventh seed again? That's possible. We're not ruling that out. But this isn't a team that's set to be a Super Bowl contender or anything like that. They don't have that type of talent at the quarterback position, and they don't have enough talent throughout the rest of their roster. So that's unfortunate, but it's also reality. And acting like that isn't reality, and that keeping Mason Cole or Patrick Peterson would have helped this team, is just putting your head in the sand, to be honest. That's not anything that was in the realm of possibility for this team or those players this upcoming season. So I don't want to revisit all of that, but I did see that as a talking point online, and I was like, rather than tweet about this and get myself in trouble, I'm just going to address it on the podcast. So there's my thoughts on that. Let's get to some of the questions from you all, because there are some good ones here. Nick Martin says, who would be your favorite prospects for Pittsburgh in a trade back scenario? I've got to be honest with you. I have fallen in love with the trade back scenario for the Steelers in the first round. I don't necessarily feel like they have to go all the way back down the board or down out of the first round or into the 30s or anything like that. However, I am intrigued by just the amount of sheer options that are likely on the board for the Steelers. Let's say they pick at 20. We know that there's going to be a couple tackles off the board. And probably, depending on who you ask, obviously, and I'm still working my way through the tackles, subscribe over at Audibles and Analytics to get breakdowns on probably the top 12 tackles or so in the draft this week. And then, as I said, on the Yin Snow Ball Pod tomorrow, we'll be talking more and more about tackles as well. I feel like the middle tier of these tackles after the top one or two guys go off the board is all going to be fairly comparable to each other. So I'm not like you have to get this one guy at 20. Like, I don't see that type of situation yet, with a couple guys here still to get through in my evaluation, but I don't see it being that type of situation for Pittsburgh. So I'm not really worried. I don't want to move up for anybody. Joe Alt would be the only guy to move up for. He's going to be off the board by that point in time. The top three receivers will be off the board by that time, you would assume. And so as long as those things happen, I see no need for the Steelers to move up in this draft. The only corner is really the only thing you would maybe say that could be a possibility. I would not move up for another tackle in this draft. I think there's a lot of projects that could be there at 20, the guys that need some work, and that's most tackles, honestly, coming to the NFL. And so I'm not necessarily saying that would be a bad idea for this team, but there could be a couple tackles that are pretty comparable, a couple wide receivers that are pretty comparable, and a couple corners that are pretty comparable when the Steelers go on the clock. Not to mention, I think every interior offensive lineman in the draft, unless you count some of the tackles that will be switching to interior O-line, maybe like a Talese Fuaga or someone of that nature, you know, perhaps even a Graham Barton, maybe off the board at that point. But I think Jackson Powers Johnson is going to be on the board still at this point. Zach Frazier is obviously still going to be on the board.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
So moving back from 20, when you have all these options that might be there that are pretty comparable to each other, I think the most foolish thing the Steelers could do is fall so in love with any of those players that are likely to be there that they feel like we have to have this guy. We can't trade down five spots. And if we miss him, we miss him. We move on to a player that's pretty comparable, in my opinion. Like, I just don't see any player that is like so going to be so good that might be there at those positions. Now, if you want to just go best talent available and like Johnny Newton's there and you want to add another rusher like that to your front, just put that group over the top. I totally get that. I don't think a wide receiver, tackle, or center, that's going to be the best decision. Mm-hmm. Corner's the one where it gets interesting. I think that's probably of these valuable position groups. We know a couple tackles will go off the board early. We know three wide receivers are going off the board early. We know four quarterbacks are going off the board early at this point in time. We know there's likely to be an edge rusher or two. There's going to be a corner or two. Who are they going to be? I think that's one of the big questions facing us. Brock Bowers is going to be in that mix probably ahead of them. So right there is probably, you know, 13 of the upcoming picks, 14 of the upcoming picks, and then who's going to fill in those other spots is a big question mark. And then which corners is that going to be in, and how high does this team feel about those corners? So next week we'll talk about corners pretty extensively on this podcast, see what the options are. We've already done that with wide receivers, and we'll keep sprinkling in that with centers, but there's only like three guys right now, and I'm going to talk about all three of those guys before the draft on this podcast too, like pretty in depth. But in terms of the rest of the group, I really think that trading down could be a couple spots could be a great option for the Steelers to be able to add another asset or pick, and then to be able to use that pick to fortify one of these weaker positions as well. Even if they don't end up hitting on all those picks, it gives them another bite at the apple, coupled with next year's draft, to be able to put that more complete unit out there for what they should be aiming for in 2025 would be like the year that they're ready to try and compete again. That needs to be kind of the focus, I think. And so adding assets, I am just a big, big fan of that. And I'd rather trade down in the first round than trade down in another round, not only because you're going to get more back, but in the other rounds, you could be really missing out on some of the top talent that's left on the board if you trade down in the second round. And I'm not as comfortable doing that, where I think in this range of the first, you're going to have a ton of comparably graded prospects, comparably evaluated prospects by me on the board here at positions of need for the Steelers. And so being able to add another pick while still getting basically the same caliber of player you would have at 20 is definitely the again, none of these paths are foolproof, but it's the best possible path percentages wise to getting a potentially two good players of value for the price of one. So that would be my approach just in general to trading down. Some of my favorite prospects in the trade down situation, which corners are on the board. I like Nate Wiggins a lot. If you can trade down and get him, I'd feel really good about it. Quinyon Mitchell's stock seemed like he's going to be a top 12 lock. Now it feels like the top 12 is so filled up with these obvious locks. He could go in the next eight picks. He could sneak into the top 12 and he could surprise. But that would be a player that I'd be really interested in if he's sliding a little bit. I think Terrion Arnold's probably the most likely to be off the board at that point in time. I still have to watch Cooper DeJean to give you my opinion on him, but there's definitely so many corners in this draft. I think that people I respect, and I haven't even gotten all of them yet, people I respect really think highly of. So that could remain a possibility. If you're here and you feel like you could trade down, and you know, if I think Johnny Newton's one of the best players in the class. It feels like he is in the 20s for most people right now. When you look at draft boards, that's crazy to me. But I just am never going to complain about adding another top, like a elite caliber player at any position on the defensive front. Like, I think it's just that important of a position and that important of a role. So that would be ecstatic about that. I don't know if they could trade down and do that. I'd have to look and see kind of what the situations are with the teams behind them and who else would be on the board, but something to evaluate. One of the interior offensive linemen, Graham Barton, Jackson Powers Johnson, for sure in that range. I don't know if Zach Frazier is going to go that early, but if you trade down a little bit further, maybe he would be a target. And then a tackle, I would expect, just based on what we've heard, that Joe Alt and Olu Fashanau and Fuaga maybe are off the board at that point in time. I think Fuaga's a guard. Maybe J.C. Latham is an option there. Maybe Amarius Mims. Those guys are probably, Fautino seems like he's going to be off the board for Washington. He may be a guard for me. Haven't finished his evaluation yet. So I think that tackle's the one that is a little bit of, everybody's like, oh, this tackle class is amazing. Not saying it isn't, but Alt is, to me, clearly the best guy I've seen so far. I still have to finish Latham and Fautino. I think Mims is a huge risk. So if you could trade down and get him, I feel way better about him than I would at 20. So he would be one for sure. And then I think, yeah, I'm assuming Alt and Fashanau will be off the board at that point in time. I think so. Mims would probably be the one player I'd say, yeah, if you're going to target a tackle, I'd trade down from 20 and try to see. And if he's still there, great. If not, go another direction. Because honestly, I think some of these later tackles in this draft, like, there's a lot of guys getting said, oh, this tackle class is amazing. Look at the top of it. Fuaga's going to be a guard, I think. Jordan Morgan's going to be a guard, I think. So there's like a couple of these guys that I just don't. Graham Barton's obviously going to be a guard. Most people have already moved him there. But there's a number of these guys that are probably going to play inside at the next level. Latham, I don't know where people's bandwidth is out on him, but he's been talked about for that. I mean, all these guys honestly have been. Alt is going to play outside. Fashanu is going to play outside. And Mims is going to play outside. But other than those three, I think everybody else has kind of been talked about as a possibility to play inside. You could be a situation where three of the top consensus, six tackles, and Fautanu and Fuaga end up playing guard in the NFL. And it's just like, man, like, those are like Jordan Morgan as well. Like, if those are in most people's top eight tackles, and they're probably guards in the next level. So I just think that is going to alter how this tackle, it might not be quite as crazy at the top as people think. There's still a number of good prospects for sure. Guys like Mims, and to an extent, I think Fashanu are projects a little bit, but they need work, I think, before they're going to be what they're cranked up to be right now. So there's a real possibility you get into the next tier of tackles. Like, I like Blake Fisher from Notre Dame, who is a natural right tackle, way more than most for sure. There's some other good players. There's people I trust, like Roger Rosengarten from Washington. Christian Jones from Texas is older, but if you get in the middle rounds and that hasn't fallen for whatever way, in a way that you'd address tackle, like, he could be an option. Javon Foster from Missouri is really intrigued me from what I've seen from him at the Senior Bowl, and then I watched a little bit of his tape. He seems like an interesting option. Not sure on his measurables. He may be a guard too. I'll peek at that while we're talking here. But Glaze from Maryland has been another one that's been kind of floated my direction by some people. Say, watch out for this guy. Yeah, Foster, 34 and 5/8 inch arms. I mean, so he's going to be a tackle at the next level. And I think that he's really interesting to me as well. So I think there just could be a number of guys down the board at tackle who end up being pretty good players, and they may not have the ceiling of some of these big toolsy guys at the top, like a Latham or a Mims or even Fautanu and Fuaga. Like, they might be guards, so there's a transition there. I think everybody's getting so wrapped up in tools guys that smart teams, I think, are going to be able to grab some of these yeah, we're just more pro ready. We're ready to play. Like, we don't have these sky high ceilings, but the Steelers already spent a first round pick on a tackle. Like, they don't need two first round tackles. You just need to find another guy who can play and who can hold it down. And so being able to find a guy like that in the later rounds is definitely attractive to me. I know that I'm not saying don't pass up on a great pick if he's there, but I'm just not quite sure the difference between some of these guys that are typically put in people's top 15s overall are going to end up being that different from players who you could get in the second and third round. So I would love to trade. If you're going to go tackle in the first round, I'd love to trade down to do it. So those would be some of my options. Very long answer to Nick Martin's question. Somebody asked, what the hell is wrong with the Suns? you shouldn't ask me that on this podcast because you're probably asking me in jest, but I will actually go off about that another time, though. Deermaid says, thoughts on the idea of James Daniels moving to center? Don't hurt me. Judging by the visits and pro days, it looks like cornerback, offensive tackle, wide receiver are priorities. Just wondering where the center will come from. Yeah, this is so interesting. I don't know, and I apologize. Maybe I should know this, although I'm not credentialed media or on site ever at all. So I don't know if they've, Steelers front office or coach, anybody is, this offseason has even been asked about James Daniels moving to center. So if somebody knows and hears it on the podcast and they know exactly where that, like where they actually spoke about it, I would love to hear it. I'm sure they have at some point during James Daniels' time in Pittsburgh. I just don't know why it hasn't been a big talking point this offseason, but it doesn't seem like, I haven't seen them say anything about it. I've heard them mention Herbig as an option at center, but I haven't heard them mention anything about James Daniels being moving to center this season. James Daniels actually was better at center in the past, per PFF grades, per PFF evaluations. Even if you're not big into those for offensive linemen, which I'm not, Brandon Thorne, who I trust over anybody with offensive line evaluation, said he believes center is James Daniels' best position. He thinks his best tape has come there. He's watched all of Daniels' snaps, I'm sure, in his career. And so I would just say that should be a very, very highly considered option. It just doesn't feel like they're doing that. They haven't even talked about that at all. And there's no reason to keep that a secret. So especially when they've said, oh, we have an option on our roster, it's Herbig. And you're like, what? Like, Nate Herbig is your option? Like, that just seems so silly to me that you would do that instead of just playing Herbig at guard and Daniels at center. But it doesn't seem like they're going that way. So you're 100% right, Deermaid, that this should absolutely be an option. And it would alleviate some of the need that they feel like they probably have for center in this draft, and you could just focus more on, okay, who's the best interior offensive lineman? We'll figure out if he can snap or not later. We're just trying to fill another position. If he can't snap, Daniels can be that guy. If he does and he jumps in and he picks up center right away, awesome. But I mean, having a vet in that role is better anyway than having a rookie. So it's been a while since Daniels did it, so he could get out there and play center and look rough. I'm not, you know, just full disclaimer there, but I do think his best play in the NFL has come when he's been at center. Matthew Potter asks first, two questions. First, assuming offensive tackle and center in the top 98 picks, the Steelers have four picks in the top 98, how many points does the offense add? Ooh, interesting question. Now, let's answer that one first. I don't know how many points. I mean, there is a lot to be said with just building up your offensive line. And although I think there probably aren't as many, oh, this is like so, like there is a million top five offensive tackle types in this class. That's probably overdone. I don't think that's true. I still think there's a lot of good offensive linemen in this class, and there's a lot of promise. Now, some of these guys are going to bust too. So figuring out which ones won't, which ones will, it remains one of the most challenging things the teams do when it comes to offensive tackles, because it is to evaluate the scheme and system that these guys come from and the uniqueness of how what they're asked to do compared to what they'll do in the NFL. It's just a lot of projection. The caliber of pass rusher they face, like every play in the NFL compared to what they see in college, big leaps. And so I think that if they can hit on both of those, if they in the top 98 and they're both like quality starters to all pro level players, I think it adds considerably to the offense. I do, because hopefully you have two solid guards already that you can win with. And if you can add another, you know, legit solid to very good to very good player at center, obviously what range he falls in matters, but and then to the other tackle spot, and Broderick Jones just develops even into an adequate player, I think you have a pretty good group offensive line. People who listen to Audibles and Analytics have heard Ollie and I talk a lot probably over the years about offensive line being a weak link position group. People really value the high end, the elite stud, and I do too. But if you have weak links on your offensive line, teams just figure out where that is and then attack it with their scheme, with their pass rushers, with blitzes. There's just so many different ways to be successful. And so you can have a left tackle just stoning people every single play. And if the left guard's trash, like, you're still going to have issues. And so it is a weak link unit. And so the idea of just not having a weak link by being able to hit on center and tackle if they take both and with some of these first four picks is very, very important and very attractive to me as a process, as a philosophy, as a team building method. I'm for that. I wish that they hadn't created this whole wide receiver because that I would feel, but like if they just were going into this and they were like, okay, we need a corner for sure. Obviously, hopefully they would have signed somebody if they didn't trade for Jackson. But we still need a corner for sure early in this draft. We need a tackle at some point day two, and we need a center at some point day two. Like, I would have felt much better about where this thing is going, but the hay is in the barn with the Deontay Johnson thing. Matthew also asked, second, you talk about getting very good on defense as the best path. Would it be easier, more impactful to go from 6-1 on defense or from 28-14 on offense? I hear what you're saying, Matthew. Those all-in-one stats are just so misleading. I think, like, it's, you know, I know, like, I'm not saying they're trash at all. Please hear me on that. Like, I do think the Steelers defense did play reasonably well at times last year. But look at what they built that profile against in terms of opposing quarterbacks and offenses over the second half of the season after being just objectively trash the first half of the season. And so there, like, if you look at other metrics beyond just some of those things, like where they're the sixth ranked defense, and I think that's scoring this past season, there are a lot of other metrics to give you a much better idea as whether their defense was actually valuable or not. And you always have to take into context, like, the fact that they had this unbelievable run of facing back quarterbacks or injured quarterbacks or teams that were far from fully healthy on offense or just bad offenses, bad teams. And so that just has to all be taken into consideration. It's just so important. And they didn't even play that well, obviously, in those games, but you're just not going to get worked over like you would if you were facing quality players. So I think that affected those rankings quite a bit there. Would it be easier, though, or more impactful to go from 16-1 on defense or more 28-14 on offense? I mean, for sure it would be more impactful to go higher on offense. There's no question there. And so to be clear about what I'm saying here, it's like the best path for the Steelers this offseason, I think, is if they want to compete this offseason. I don't necessarily care about competing this season that much because, for me, I just want them to be better of in the future, 2025, 2026. Hopefully, I would love for it to be sooner for Watt's age and some of the Hayward's age, but it just doesn't feel like that's possible to me. So when I say that, I'm just saying for their perspective, with the quarterbacks they have and the fact they just hurt their off, got worse on offense this offseason by trading Deontay, given that, the best path forward for them is just to become an awesome defensive football team and to not make mistakes on offense, to hang in there. I'm not going to say run the ball a ton. You have to be able to throw the football. If you ignore that and act like you can be a running team, you're not going anywhere anyway. But to me, like, if they're trying to compete, the best thing that they could do is say, okay, we have an elite front line. We have Keanu Benton who's ready to break out. We've got Highsmith Watt. We've got Hayward. How do we put that group over the top? Or how do we just make our secondary, you know, make a Joey Porter, like, those guys healthy and Porter out there on the field for a full season? Those are crucial pieces. Elliott's a solid add, I think. I don't think it's a great add. Queen's a solid add. Like, so you've got some pieces now you can work with where you can make this a really good unit. You need the other corner. You need a nickel corner. You need some of those things to hit. So it's not like there's a foolproof path. Oh, this is obviously going to be the number one defense in the NFL. But I do think that, to me, that's a best path for them being really good this season. Because with their quarterbacks, I just don't think that's going to happen on offense. I'm not sure they're going to get to 14 on offense. And so that's just, I think it's more achievable to do one than the other, is kind of my point. But long term, no, I'm all about, like, I just want best player available. This year, I understand, like, these are not going to be the quarterbacks of the future for this team. If Fields is, awesome, bonus, you know, great, amazing move, franchise caliber changing move, sure. Like, if that happens, that's awesome. I'm just not banking on that for sure. You give yourself a bite of the apple, you try and find out, that's good business to do that. It's smart to do it, but I don't know that I would, I'm definitely not in a spot where I would bank on that or even expect that to happen. That would be a pleasant surprise if it happens, I think. Diego Castillo asks, with Boykin gone, who are going to be the gunners on the team? Great question. Got a gunner special teams question. Let's actually look at this because I didn't necessarily look at this ahead of time to think who that would be, but it doesn't feel like, I mean, definitely Van Jefferson's going to play special teams. I'm not sure if he's going to be a gunner or not. Well, we'll see what other wide receivers make this team too, but that's why I think the roster spot between Calvin Austin and Quez Watkins is a camp battle, because I don't think they're going to keep both of those guys and Van Jefferson and a rookie. That seems like something they just won't go down that path. So one of those guys, then, I mean, let's even look at the corner room. Like, there's some really interesting, just athletic, like, what is Corey Trice going to be this season? Because I think that could be a great role for him if he's able to play and able to stay out on the field. He has to make it through camp. That's the big thing with Corey Trice. Can he make it through camp healthy? But he's physical and aggressive. I think that could be a fit for him. I'm not sure I feel the same way about Darius Rush. Athletically, maybe there's something there, but I do think Trice could be a good gunner. So those would be my early guesses. I don't know if Van Jefferson's played gunner before, but I think they'll put Trice in that role and see what's there. And then one wide receiver, perhaps somebody who still hasn't been added to the roster. How many wide receivers are you confident are going to make the team in Pittsburgh? Probably Pickens and Jefferson. And I'm not confident any of the other guys in this roster make the team. Like, we're just going to have to figure out. Some of them will. I just don't know who that is right now at this point. So it's going to be, there's going to be a wide receiver that's in the mix for this, perhaps making the team. This will be a big part of it. This is who ends up being the best gunner out of this group. But there will be another wide out in this mix, I believe.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Fergo says, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much faith do you have in the Steelers having back-to-back good drafts? Also, thoughts on Andy Weidel and if he will have a big impact on D-line, O-line selections for the Steelers in this draft. I don't know for sure with Weidel, and I don't know that there's a way I could be really positive unless I, you know, ask some people in the organization or, you know, and that kind of stuff to hear, like, how much. I would guess that he'll have an impact. I think Omar Khan's the type of guy that, like, wants to hear from all parties and consider everybody's opinion. I think that's a big part of his process. So I think Andy Weidel's going to have a big say in that and the D-line, O-line selections and other aspects of the team building as well. I think he and Omar Khan are pretty much in lockstep there. So that's been my observation from the outside. Scale 1 to 10, how much faith do you have the Steelers having back-to-back good drafts? I think the jury is still more out on last year's draft than people probably would like to admit. It certainly seems like a very good draft. It's a good start. You know, I think the Porter pick and the Benton picks are probably going to hit, which is probably going to make people think at least of it as a good draft. But Broderick Jones really has to be good, I think, for it to be a great draft. Like, you can't really have traded up in the first round and whiffed on that pick. Like, that's pretty important. And there were moments last year, and he certainly wasn't helped any by the coaching and by playing out of position, but he might be asked to do that again. So it's not necessarily going to be for sure Broderick Jones' fault, but there's a real possibility here that the team lets him down to a degree that makes that pick look like a bust. eventually. I hope that's not the case. I'm not saying I expect that to be the case. I just think he is a very physical, aggressive football player who is great on the move. So there's going to be some highlight reel stuff, just like there was at Georgia. And he did that last year, I thought too, that fans are maybe not understanding down to down consistency wise. Broderick Jones wasn't that good last year, especially in pass protection, which is what really, really matters. So I just still have a ton of questions there with that first round pick. Everybody knows I wasn't the biggest Broderick Jones fan. They traded up for him. I would have taken Christian Gonzalez. Gonzalez was amazing last year until he got hurt. Don't know how that injury is going to affect him. Don't know about some of the stuff you heard after the draft. Like, oh, teams were not so sure that he's that tough of a guy or that he has, the, you know, I don't know. That could be just straight slander for no reason. I'm not sure. Just that's what I would have done. So how the Broderick Jones things goes, I'm very interested. I hope it works out. I hope I end up being wrong. I don't know that last year was a step in the direction of that being the case. Let's put it that way. And I'm just very up in the air on that pick still. So that matters. Darnell Washington, I mean, you have to be able to play. Like, this is a big year. You have to be able to play. Like, you're supposed to be one of the more pro-ready guys in terms of at least filling a role. And there were times where he was really good as a blocker last year, and this year is a big one. Like, you need to cement yourself as – you need to probably be one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL, and that may be unfair for a third-round pick, but that's the hype. That's your size. That's what you were supposed to be doing at Georgia, like all that stuff. Like, so this is – that part is supposed to be the transition for you that makes sense. So – I think it's a big year for him in terms of his evaluation as well, making sure that he ends up being the pick that he was supposed to be. So, yeah, I mean, the middle of those picks obviously probably makes it seem pretty good. We're probably going to remember it fondly because I do think Porter and Benton are both good, and I think they're both going to hit. And then if Herbig becomes this third rusher who ends up being like an 8 to 10 sack guy, which isn't unheard of in today's NFL. Now, they have to actually play him. That would be nice. Then, yeah, we could probably remember this draft very fondly. And so I do think it was a good draft. Whether it's an amazing draft or not, some does hinge a lot, I think, hinges on Broderick Jones, especially because they traded up. I think that's an important part of it that we forget about. You better hit when you trade up. It's, you don't want to give up things to trade up if you're not going to be certain. What was the next part of that question? So, yeah, scale 1 to 10. So I do have faith that they would have another, you know, solid draft. Like I'm more excited about Omar Khan's drafting than I was Kevin Colbert's toward the end because it just was so obvious what Colbert was going to do. And I kind of enjoy a little bit more of the uncertainty. Although last year's picks, I guess, were not that surprising for the Steelers. But, yeah, I'm intrigued with how Khan sees building this team as being the best path. And I really do wonder if this year he's going to go pretty heavy offensive line and just try to like be like, we don't care, we'll patch it up a corner, patch it up a wide out, we're gonna get dominant in the trenches, and then we'll talk to y'all after that. And so maybe that's the approach. In round one, Brian Schaefer asked, in round one, how many tackles would have to be left on the board at 20 for us to trade back? 5 of the top 10, or does a run off an offensive tackle make them trade up? Also, is there any smoke to Herbig as center number one? Has he been rooming with Munchak and Mannyweather in Kaba the last 2 years? I don't think there's any smoke to Herbig at center one. There's just no way. I would just be so shocked. Talked a little bit about the trade back at 20. I would think that two players that I consider tackles probably at this time go in the top 20 picks or top 19 picks in Alt and I mean, Mims could. Mims is going to be, I mean, he's 104 true pass sets in his college career. I just don't know how much stock do you put in that? And some of those are just BS. Like, I mean, he's not going up against anybody. He's not getting challenged at all. So I've had to watch like 7-8 Mims games to try and get a good feel for who he is against different types of players. And I think there's some real issues there, but his tool set is unbelievable. So he could be gone. Beauty's in the eye of the beholder with these things. We've seen tackles go pretty early. Alt will be gone. You got to think Fashanu will be gone. You know, Latham, I have to finish his evaluation. I think based on what I've seen, I would say Fautanu and Fuaga are guards. Fuaga I definitely have as a guard. And those are probably the guys, right? I mean, I guess some people think Tyler Guyton could sneak in there to the first round. I don't think Jordan Morgan's going to get in there. He's probably a guard anyway. I don't think Blake Fisher's going to get in there, who I like. So, yeah, that's probably it. So you're probably looking at Alt, Fashanu, Latham, Mims, who I consider tackles, that are probably going to go in the first round. And then you're going to have, you know, some teams that think Fontenot and Fuaga are tackles that are probably going to take them in the first round. So there's six guys. And then you have your conversation about whether Jordan Morgan sneaks in or Tyler Guyton sneaks in. I don't know that you're going to get Suamatai from BYU in there or Kieran from Yale in there. I don't know that any of those guys are going to sneak in necessarily. And then obviously I think Graham Barton could be in that first round. He's probably going to play. He's a tackle at Duke, but probably going to play inside at the next level. And maybe Powers Johnson. So you could have probably eight offensive linemen in the first round, and then half of those could end up playing inside, though, at the next level. So I do think that, like I said, it's being overbuilt a little bit. So if the run happens, then you just wait and you take a Blake Fisher, I think, in the later rounds. Like, don't – I would not try to trade up. Like, I just don't think to me that you could trade up 2 years in a row for tackles who are projects and just hope it works out. You haven't been that good at this, like developing offensive linemen. I would be real, really scared about that process. So to me, basically under no circumstances can you trade up for a tackle in this year's draft. I think that would be a very bad idea, unless Joe Alt is falling down the board for some unknown reason. So that would be my approach to that. Trading back, I talked about a little bit. Jay Gillum, would you trade up for Roma Dunze at number 8 if they could pull it off without selling the farm? Would you trade back from 20 to take either Barton or JPJ late in the first round while getting an extra pick or two? Who do you prefer between the two interior linemen? I'll talk about who I prefer in a future podcast between the two of them. Barton is just a lot of projection because I haven't actually seen him at center, so that's going to be tricky to compare them, I think. But I think Barton is a really good athlete, and I think he'll probably go higher. Teams are probably more excited about his potential. So I would definitely trade back from 20 into the late first round, either for those guys or somebody else, no doubt. I would love to trade back if those are your top targets on the board. See what you can add to your stockpile or your pile of assets. I wouldn't trade up for Roma Dunze at number 8. I don't think, no, because you ask, could you pull it off without selling the farm? You can't. You can't get from 20 to 8, you know, without giving up assets that you just absolutely need. And it's just, I like Odunze. I think he's awesome. I think he's probably going to be awesome in the NFL. But you just can't putting all your eggs in that basket. You know, it's just not a good process, in my opinion, especially because you're giving up multiple assets to move up to number 8. I just don't think that's good business. Plus, he's, you know, you probably need a more different type of player than what you have right now in George Pickens. And Odunze would be, I don't think that's a huge deal to me, to be clear, but I just would. I wouldn't be moving up to 8 for him. Let's put it that way. Judging by the cornerback visits, who do you like between Max Melton, Nate Wiggins, and Andrew Phillips? I haven't seen Melton or Phillips yet. I like Wiggins quite a bit. So Mailman asked that question. Appreciate the question. Yeah, we'll have to try and get eyes on Melton and Phillips. There's like 30 corners in this class that people think could go in the top 100. I don't know why that's not being talked about more. Is that like everybody's like, oh, this wide receiver group, this tackle group. What about the D-tackle group and what about the corner group? I mean, these groups seem phenomenal. I finished the D-tackles. They're awesome. I think those groups are better, or the D-tackle group at least, and maybe the corner group. I haven't gotten all the way through them yet, but just in terms of depth at least, like I feel more confident in some of the corners I've watched than some of the wideouts I've watched in this class. I think the wide receiver class, 3 awesome guys at the top. I think there's a lot more uncertainty and overrated guys through the rest than most seem to. There's a ton of players, so people are still going to hit. We're not going to look back at it and say, oh, this was a disaster wide receiver class, because there's just so many guys that could be possibilities that are like, you know, oh, these guys are all top 100s. Like a couple will hit and be solid, but I think there'll be a lot of busts from this class that don't meet our current expectations at wide receiver. Any mid-round center prospects? Rob asks. I haven't gotten necessarily to some of their evaluations. I watched a little bit of Mason McCormick from South Dakota State. He'd be like a project type of player. I know Bo Limmer had, I think he was even with the great athletic testing. I'm just not sold on him. He was not very good at the Senior Bowl, I didn't think. I think his tape is very mediocre. But perhaps there's like upside there that you could get out of him. Christian Mahogany from Boston College could be one. I have to get my eyes on him more. A lot of these guys, Christian Haynes is really interesting to me. I don't know where he goes. Some people think second round, some people think fourth. So I don't know where he goes, but he could be a center. Cooper Beebe's probably a guard only from Kansas State, I think. That's the funny thing. There's all these tackles that could switch to inside, and some we've already switched. Like I think Graham Barton is one of those guys. But there aren't a lot of like great interior offensive linemen who played inside in college in this class. You know, I think there's good depth, I'd say, but there aren't like a ton of high end guys, especially at the guard, that the just true guards. I think you're going to see some of these tackles move to guard, but I don't think you're going to see a lot of great college guards in this draft. C. Smitty asks, outside of tackle, wide receiver, cornerback, what position group would you not be surprised by if the Steelers targeted it early, and who would make sense for us at that position? Wow, good question. I'm going to go defensive tackle, Cam Hayward getting up there, uncertainty for the future beyond Keanu Benton and that group. I'm going to go D-tackle, Johnny Newton would be a player that they would – he has the personality they'd target. He's a great athlete, great production. Yeah, there's Big Ten stuff. Like, I think Johnny Newton would be the guy, if I was going to guess, yeah, that they would target. Why not James Daniel to center? AJ James, appreciate the question. We talked about that one already, so that's good. So that brings us through, yeah, I think all your questions. Yeah, good discussion, great questions. We got a lot still to talk about, I think, before the draft happens, and I'm excited to do that. Tackles tomorrow with a special guest. Then we'll get into some cornerback evaluations as well, which is going to be fun. Start talking about some of those options in the first round and beyond the next week. And we'll probably wrap up before the draft. We'll probably touch on interior offensive linemen and quarterbacks. Is anybody worth it just for kicks? So those will be some of the things you can expect coming up in the next couple shows. As always, appreciate y'all. Thanks so much for listening to another episode of the Yins No Ball podcast.